Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Bob Elson. We're set as usual for our Saturday afternoon show. Well, this weekend, there's a lot of football on, as usual. Saturday, today, a lot of big games. And then tomorrow, the Chicago Bears will take on L.A., and that should be a very tough game. Although the quarterback for L.A. is out, Hayden. But they have a backup man who comes from Alabama, Rutledge, who is very, very good. So that should be quite a game. Anyway, whatever you do, there are a lot of things to do and to listen to on radio and on television, a lot of sports and football excitement. Our guest today is one of the world's great bowlers and an old friend of mine, very close friend. He's been our guest here a number of times, Carmen Salvino. And I would suggest if you feel like competing that you don't take this guy on. He is plenty tough, unless he spots you pretty good. Anyway, we'll be talking about the great sport of bowling with Carmen Salvino, and he'll be our guest in just a moment. We're delighted to have Carmen Salvino as our guest today, one of the world's great bowlers. And it's a great sport, and we've had Carmen as our guest here on the show, well, about every year for many, many years, and it's always a great pleasure to see him. Let's go back 2 years, Carmen. The status of bowling 2 years ago, as compared today, has the interest and the participation in bowling lessened somewhat? Is it at the same level as it was 2 years ago? Or what is the status of bowling?
Well, Bob, our status has increased. We are at a lot higher level now. We're recognized more because we get more coverage on TV. We used to have only a winter series. Now we've got a winter. We've got a summer series on television. We go on cable TV in many areas of the country. The bowler's status definitely is at a level of any other sport now.
Well, now you have been a professional bowler. That means that you bowl for money. Why would someone stay as an amateur bowler if they have real ability? What's the advantage there?
Well, Bob, first of all, at a professional level, which I'm at, you have a very fine, honed athlete that has to average around 208 to 210 to make a living on bowling. And it's not that easy. A lot of young players bowl in leagues, and they average like 205 or 208 in their leagues. But when they come on the road and they bowl in a different environment every week, they do not average 210 like they do at home. So it's very difficult to compete against the high-level players that I compete against. So therefore, a lot of people remain amateur because they realize they can't do that in different bowling centers. It's like different golf courses. Not everybody's as good cross-country as they are in their own home course.
Well, you're still a very young man, and nevertheless, you've been bowling for 27 years. What have been the notable changes in the game of bowling over the years?
Well, when I was a kid, going back a few years, I'm 46 now, November the 23rd, I will be 46, that is. We had wooden pins, and now we have plastic pins. We had shellac on the surface of the lane, and since I was 17, the surface of the lane has changed about 20 times. Now they have mineral elastic, thermosafe, the lacquers, the urethanes of today, and the ball has changed. We used to have cork bowling balls when I was a kid and only rubber bowling balls. Now we have plastic bowling balls, and it's a whole different ball game now, and it's a different world.
Whole different bowl game.
Ball game, whatever. It's a whole different world out there, Bob.
Well, a fellow like you who really loves the game, you can adjust to all these things, right, without too much trouble?
Well, that's very kind of you to say. That's not quite true. I've had to work very hard to stay at the top of my profession. I've had to change my style. I worked with a friend of mine that was a mechanical engineer. He helped me change my style.
Yes, tell us about this fellow. This is an interesting story.
Well, this man, Henry Lahr, out of Wilmington, Illinois, he worked with me, and I was in a slump, and I went to see him, and he said to me, you're going to have to change your ways and quit thinking like a bowler and start thinking like a scientist or a chemical engineer and start paying more attention to what's going on in the physics of the game. And he gave me a whole lesson on physics, and ever since then, I've been a better bowler.
Well, just exactly what did he do with you as far as physics?
Well, I'll tell you, I look at the lane now in terms of friction rather than worrying about how much the ball curves. I worry about the angles. I've learned a degree of angles that get a best entry into the pocket, to get the least amount of a deflection on the ball, the type of rotation to put on different type of surfaces for something that the audience could relate to. Let's talk about something we're all familiar with, ice in the wintertime. You don't want your tires to go very fast in ice because the friction is so low, the tires won't grip. And that's the same thing when we have a lot of oil on the bowling lanes. You don't want the revolutions of your ball too high, so I slow up my revolutions now. I don't twist the ball as much on a very oily lane. When the lanes are very dry, then I put high RPMs on the ball, and I learned that through physics and the help of Henry Lahr.
Well, now you're known as a great professional bowler, and bowling is your really one of your great life's interests. How many times have you changed the weight of the ball?
Well, I've changed the balance of the ball. The ball, we are only allowed to go to 16 pounds.
Now, I say weight and you say balance. What's the difference?
Okay, you're allowed 16 pounds, but it's how the weight is dispersed. Like, if you have an object, you're allowed to put 3 ounces of the top of that ball could be heavier on the top, 3 ounces heavier than it can be on the bottom. It could be 1 ounce heavier on either side of the ball. So the total of the ball could weigh 16 pounds. But it's an off-balance object so that you can increase your curve. Now, when you start playing around with these off-balance weights, you better be sure that you know scientifically what these weights are going to do for your particular style. And that's where it becomes a very scientific game in terms of learning the balance of the ball.
Well, they say you learn something every day. I learned something just now about bowling.
Well,
I think all of our friends here did, too.
Well, we had another thing happen at bowling that would be very interesting, too, that you could relate to baseball. Like, I know Gaylord Perry won't admit to a spitter, but he put some substance on the ball and it made the ball curve differently. Well, we had some bowlers that were dipping their ball in a chemical to make the ball soften up and change the cover stock of the ball, and it enhanced the characteristic of the curve. So we had a spitter for a while in bowling until it became illegal.
Whatever happened to your advisor and friend?
My advisor had a stroke, Bob. He's not feeling real good right now, but he's coming along real well. I wish him well if he's listening to the broadcast, which I'm sure he is.
Yes, I hope he is.
I'm sure he is, and he'll be doing all right. He's going to be coming back soon.
What were some of the theories that he had for you, for example, going into a big tournament?
Well, first of all, he always told me to go in there with a realistic attitude. Don't be looking for reasons why you shouldn't be good. Look for reasons why you should be good. And I think that's one of the biggest things I learned in life is you've got to look for answers. There are our answers out there. For example, I'd go out there and I'd test out the lanes, and then I would call them on the telephone and say, well, Hank, the lanes are doing this. They're hooking a lot. Then we would discuss the type of rotations and the type of speed that we could throw into different angles, and we would figure out the lanes that way, and there are always answers in life. Just got to work a little harder. That's what I learned. Bend that back and work.
Now, you bowl for a living.
I've bowled for a living since I was 17 years old. That's going to be 29 years, the 23rd of this November.
What's the most money you ever won in a year?
Oh, I've gone up to over the 50,000 mark many times, and that's not counting my endorsements. And is the government listening, by the way?
Oh, they got some bowlers down there, too.
Yeah, you better believe they have.
Yeah, they got a lot of sports fans down there. Well, anyway, what's happened with the game? Is the game bigger now than it ever was?
Yes, it is, Bob. In fact, right now we have a World's Tournament coming up in Deerfield, Illinois, starting November 11th through the 17th. And we've got bowlers from all over coming from Australia. They're coming from Japan and Germany, and I bowled against a lot of these players, and I went to Japan in 1962, and there was a big gap between the American bowler and the foreign player. But let me tell you, that gap is closed. Right now, we better keep our eyes on the Japanese and Germans because they are really getting a lot better every day, and we better start doing our homework so we can stay ahead of them.
It's that big in Japan.
Oh, I tell you, when I went to Japan, I was treated with royalty, and we had chauffeurs pick us up at the bowling lanes, and we had chauffeurs at the hotel. We never left our own bowling bag. They cheated us like we were king. In fact, I almost didn't come back.
It was that good over there.
Oh, huh? Yeah. Very nice.
What about other countries, say European countries? Is bowling good all over the world?
Yes, in Germany in particular. I know I've been invited to Germany this December of this year, and I'm thinking of going out there and bringing my wife with me because it's supposed to be a great country for bowling and very beautiful. My daughter just came back from Europe, and she said it was beautiful out there.
Well, what would you do there, conduct a clinic?
Yes, I would teach him how to bowl, and I'd go through my act, too. You know, I've got a little show I put on for my fans when I get out there, and I demonstrate how to bowl and kind of dance around. I enjoy that. I enjoy seeing the crowd have a good time.
Now, if there was somebody here who had never bowled in his life and all of a sudden listening to you decides, well, I don't get any exercise, I think I'll take up bowling, what would be the first thing for that person to do?
Well, the first thing I would recommend is they go to a professional pro shop. Just don't go buy a ball anywhere and get the correct weight, because if the weight's too heavy at the beginning, it's going to hurt your arms, you get a sore shoulder, and your timing's going to be off. So that's very critical. Get the proper weight. In fact, a lot of men are listening to this broadcast. Too many men are using 16-pound bowling balls. They should probably be using 15 or even 14 and a half, because they only bowl once a week. They may be sitting behind a desk all day long, and they don't have the muscles built up, so they should go to a lighter weight, and they'd be a lot better bowler.
Well, now, you've seen ball players, batters come up to the plate, and they, while they're waiting for their turn, they swing two or three bats. That's to make the bat that they're eventually going to use when they face the pitcher seem lighter. Is there the same routine in bowling?
Yes, in bowling we have what we call shadow bowling balls that you get to throw before a tournament. You get four shots on each lane as a warm-up. Then that's all over. Then the tournament starts. But you never start cold. You always get those warm-ups.
Well, how heavy is that ball?
Well, it's the same weight, but you make sure you just throw it easy. You don't throw it as hard as you're going to throw in competition so that you just get your body loose. That's like a warm-up equivalent to lifting the bat.
Carmen, what type of surface do you prefer to bowl on? You mentioned there are a number.
That's right. I have learned that a lot of players skip bowling tournaments because of different surfaces on the lanes. I do not look at it that way. I've bowled every tournament I could possibly bowl in on all surfaces, because I'll tell you why. There might be something about one surface is going to teach me about something else. I've gone to tournaments where I did not cash and I did not play well on those lanes. And I've gone home and I've talked to the engineer and we've studied those conditions. And I've gone back and win tournaments on the same condition I didn't cash, because you must elevate yourself. And every time you go to bowl, you must get a little better on that given condition. And I'll bowl on all of them. Slick, a lot of oil, dry lanes, heavy pins, light pins, you name it. I feel if you want to someday get into the Hall of Fame in your sport, if you start bypassing things, you're on your way out. You must challenge them.
When you use the term you didn't cash, you mean you didn't cash in?
I didn't make any money in the prize money that week, but we have, like, first places, say, $15,000 or $20,000, and they'll pay, like they do in golf, down the line up to 40, 48 spots. And when you don't cash in 48 spots, you are not bowling well. And I've had that happen to me because I did not know enough about my job to bowl good on those lanes. So I had to go do my homework. And when I go back there, I make sure I learn.
If you have to divide the game of bowling into two, let's say two ways, the mental side and the physical side, how would you proportion it?
I would say that you would definitely have to say that the mental side is a good 50%. And when I say by that is, you've got to have both. There's no such thing as a guy all physical and no mental, or all mental and no physical. It doesn't work that way. But too many times athletes have great physical qualities for their sport, but they are very weak mentally. And it's in the difference between, I think, a good player, a star, and a superstar is in the mind.
Well, that's a good way to put it. I would believe that, too. I've had ball players. For example, I talked to Ted Williams. You know Ted. You're a great sports fan. He was a great hitter, and he was saying a lot of batters, they hit 220, 230 all their major league career, and the thing is that they don't realize that part of it is mental. You've got to adjust your thinking to it.
The most important thing I think I've learned in life is your attitude. If you have a very bad attitude, I don't care how good you are physically, if you're looking for reasons why you should fail, you will fail no matter how great you are physically. I've learned that you've got to have the right attitude, a good positive attitude, and it's not something you can say in words. You better believe it. You can't tell somebody, well, look, go have a good positive attitude. They either have it, that's inborn, or they don't have it, and that's the one thing you can't train somebody in.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is an old friend and one of the world's great bowlers, Carmen Salvino. And we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest today is an old friend and one of the world's great bowlers, Carmen Salvino, whose main interest in life, outside of his family, and he's a wonderful guy, is the great sport of bowling. I can remember, 10 or 12 years ago. Remember Guy Bush?
Sure.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Well, Guy had a bowling alley, and Gabby Hartnett had a bowling alley.
On the south side of Chicago. It was a beautiful place. It was like a castle. It was real large.
Yeah. Well, in those days, as I recall, you almost had to get an appointment to get an alley. Well, is that the same today?
Well, it's not quite as lucrative as it was then in that case as far as getting the lane, but you still have to be very careful of what time of the day you go to get a lane because there's leagues on in the evening. All bowling centers are filled with leagues, and they have leagues on a lot of times in the afternoon. So it's still a little difficult to get a lane, but the open play is not as big as it used to. Now people are more into leagues.
Does the lighting in an establishment affect your game?
Oh, definitely. And I'll tell you where you notice that more than anything, Bob. When you go on TV, they have to have all those hot lights and the bright lights for the cameras. It's like going into a white maze almost when you bowl on TV, and the lanes look different under the camera lights than they do anything else, and the lighting has a great effect on as you're going, especially shadows. And I'll tell you an interesting story about when we were on TV. The left lane on television was always hooking more than the right lane, and we could never figure out because the lane maintenance man kept telling us that he was doing the lanes equally in terms of the amount of oil he was putting on the lanes. Then we found out that they had three lights on the left side for the cameras and only two on the other. And those hot lights were drying out that one lane like in water being absorbed, you know. And that lane kept hooking more and more. So there's a lot of variables in bowling that a lot of people don't see, like the lighting, the heat. Or if it's cold outside, the lanes tend to freeze up a little bit. They're slicker. Or there's a lot of people when the tournaments come on, and the crowd gets that body heat, the lanes get to hooking more too.
Carmen, what do you do, for example, in a situation where, let's say you're in a major tournament and all of a sudden, like I do occasionally in my gin game, when I feel cold, I'm not catching any cards. I give my opponent a lot of conversation, but even that doesn't help. What do you do when you're cold?
Well, when I'm cold, I'll tell you, it's difficult because they don't say time out in bowling. You have to keep going. And they also don't let you talk to your opponents. So a lot of times people think that we're unfriendly on TV, and that's not true. What's happening is that very thing they say to the pro bowlers, look, no conversation among each other because we don't want anybody to get the wrong impression that we're psyching each other out. So that's why a lot of times the bowlers are very quiet, and they won't let us trip them. There's no defense.
Won't let you trip them.
There's no defense.
I can understand that. Why would you want to trip?
Well, I'll tell you, when a guy's got five in a row, you got five strikes and you've got five spares, you want to trip him. See, there's no defense in bowling. It's an offensive game, so you can't afford to be cold. You just got to go out there like a killer from frame one and do your number.
One of the things that you've always talked about when you've been our guest many times, we've always enjoyed having you here, is the business of attitude. You're a great guy on that.
Well, Bob, I'll tell you, I don't know. I've been fortunate that I've had a lot of setbacks in my life. You know, I didn't say defeats. There's a big difference between a defeat and a setback. Whenever someone's doing something and they do not succeed and then they quit, they don't learn anything from it, I call that a defeat or a failure. But whenever you go and you do something, and then you go back and you improve on it, I only call that a temporary setback. I've had a lot of temporary setbacks in my life, but no defeats or failures, because I've learned from everything that's ever happened to me.
Well, that's a good way to put it. Offhand, how many perfect games have you thrown, and how many times have you made the impossible split?
Well, first of all, I've shot 10 300 games in sanctioned play. Now, let me explain that. That's where the lanes are inspected before you bowl. That's what they do for all of our tournaments. So that's why they only count the 300s when they're inspected. That's a sanctioned play 300 game. I've got 10 of them. And others, I have over 100, but they're not counted because the lanes were not inspected before I bowled, and they won't give me credit for that. And the other question of the 7-10 split, I have not converted many because I haven't left many, and I don't want to leave them. I want to throw strikes. I'm not worried about splits. That's negative thinking. I'm looking for strikes.
Well, let's say some chump like me is bowling and I got a 7-10 split. What do I try to do?
Well, I'll tell you, you better get very coordinated and get two balls in each, one in each hand so you can shoot across the lane.
That's what I'd need.
Or put a big handle between those two balls. I tell you, that 7-10 has killed a lot of players, or just a 10-pin alone. I know a lot of players say, if I just would have knocked down that 10-pin, I'd have won the title. But that's the thing that keeps me coming back, the fact that you can't be perfect, and it's a real challenge.
Carmen Salvino, are there any great young players coming to the forefront in this game that you've spent your life in and you've made a great reputation for yourself as a not only a great person but a great bowler?
Yes, we have a lot of young players now. We've got a young man named Mark Roth from New York that's been bowling super. He's about 28 years old. We've got another kid named Marshall Holman. And we've got another fella that just came back from a heart attack, Earl Anthony, at 40 years old. And he's winning tournaments again. So that's what's so beautiful about bowling over other sports, that any age you can be great as long as you keep yourself in good condition and train well and get a good mental attitude, you can bowl great. So our sport covers all eras of players, and I've bowled against all of them. I've bowled a lot of guys now that I bowled against their fathers, and hopefully someday I can bowl against their grandchildren. Mm-hmm. That would be a lot more fun to tell the grandkid that, you know, I whipped your daddy and your grandfather.
Well, now you say there's a great tournament coming up. How much money is involved?
Well, we're going to have a tournament in Deerfield Lanes, the Brunswick World's Open, and that's going to be the 11th of November through the 17th, and there's $130,000 in prize money, and we've got players from all over the world. We've got players from Japan and Germany, so I hope a lot of people come out there. I'm bowling Monday at 1:30 in the afternoon, and I'll be bowling Tuesday at 9 o'clock in the morning and Wednesday at 6 o'clock in the evening.
Is it a one-on-one elimination or is it total score?
It's going to be total scores for the first 24 games, and then we will go into head-on competition after 24-game cut.
I notice that bowling today is getting some real good exposure on TV.
That's right, Bob. We're on all the networks now. We used to be on ABC only, but now we're on CBS and NBC and cable also, so we're getting exposure all over the country, and we're actually getting exposure overseas because a lot of our shows are shown over there.
Oh, in Europe?
Over Europe and Japan and South America also.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is one of the world's great bowlers, Carmen Salvino. And we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest today is Carmen Salvino. I want to remind you that next Saturday we'll have one of the country's outstanding basketball coaches, Ray Meyer, here from DePaul. And the following Saturday, our guest will be the radio and television critic of the Chicago Tribune, who does a great job in that area, Gary Deeb. So we'll be talking with Gary Deeb 2 weeks from today. I imagine, getting back to Carmen Salvino, you do a lot of teaching?
Yes, I do, Bob. And it's a lot of fun because people are so hungry to learn, and they want to learn the correct way of bowling. And another thing about teaching that's become very fascinating is to go to a foreign country and teach and try to get the interpretation across of someone that doesn't understand your language. And that's a lot of fun when I taught Japan.
Well, now, believe it or not, because of the fact I've been on the road all my life with baseball and that sort of thing, I have never bowled. Now, I like the game, and I enjoy seeing you great players on television and things like that. If you were starting with me today as a student, I've never had a bowling ball in my hand, what would be the first thing we'd do?
First thing we would have to do is get a lot more time than this broadcast. I could talk to you that way. I know you well enough. Well, but the first thing we would do is I'd go to measure up personally for a bowling ball to get you the proper grip. That's very important, and the proper weight. Then I would take you to bowling center, and first thing I'd say is don't worry about the score. Too many people go out there as beginners, and they're too score conscious. They don't learn the game first and let the score come. So I would work with you on the simplicity of bowling before we got into the higher mathematics of bowling.
Well, that sounds interesting.
Yes, so Now listen, are you asking me now, or are you meaning for serious? You're going to be right.
No, the only grip I'm going to have is on playing cards. Uh-huh. I do very well there.
I know. I've played you, Jen, and lost.
But bowling is a marvelous game. It's a clean game. There's a lot of sportsmanship in it. You're the type of guy who really enjoys it. You've helped a lot of people in the game.
Well, I tell you, Bob, it's something that an athlete like myself that's been in the sport over a number of years, it comes a time in your career that you've been taking from the sport, and it comes a time that you sit down, you get old enough, if you reach that plateau and lucky enough to say, hey, it's time to start giving back something to the sport, and I think that's the day you've grown.
Well, that's great. We've been delighted to have you as a guest today, and continued good luck and success. So you've been a great credit to the game.
Bob, thanks. It's always a pleasure working with you.
Our guest has been Carmen Salvino. Next Saturday, we'll be talking basketball with Ray Meyer, and the following Saturday, we'll talk with the radio and television critic of the Chicago Tribune, Gary Deeb, who is also a sports fan. Anyway, have a nice day, a nice weekend, and now this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Saturday, when we'll talk with one of the outstanding basketball coaches in the country, Ray Meyer.